We are going to be doing the 77th Psalm. Again, one of those psalms that, for no reason that I can figure out, is not very popular. And why did I choose it? Because I opened up the book that way. That's where it opened up. So that's why. And I said, oh, we haven't done that one. And I looked at it and I said, I think this will be perfect for today. This particular mizmor, I think, is extremely appropriate for today, being Yom HaShoah. Today is Yom HaShoah. And while it is not universally observed, in fact, Yom HaShoah was strongly opposed by the Chief Rabbinate of Israel when it was first proposed on this date. Both chief rabbis at that time, Harav the Chacham Nissim, who was the Rishon Lezion, and Harav Herzog at the time, were both strongly opposed to this being the day that would be commemorated for the following reasons. The choosing of this date is purely coincidental. It was simply the date that corresponded in that particular year when the Warsaw Uprising occurred. The Warsaw Uprising occurred during Pesach, actually, you see, and that year, depending on the vagaries between the lunar year and the solar year, that's the way it turned out to be. The rabbis were opposed because we do not mourn nor do we eulogize during the entire month of Nisan. Secondly, they felt that this was, and it was actually called Yom HaShoah VeHagvura, the day of the Holocaust and of the heroism. And at that time, it was declared because Israel viewed the Holocaust as a failure of the Jewish people, in that they allowed themselves to be led to their deaths like sheep to the slaughter. And in a sense, what we did then was we blamed the victim. And as a result, survivors that arrived in the state of Israel tended to be completely silent because they were looked askance. If you made it, what did you do? In other words, how did you sell out if you weren't? So you were damned if you survived and you were damned if you didn't. And this was part of a narrative that was going to justify the state of Israel and a military response. In fact, the uprising in Warsaw, while it showed that Jews can shoot a gun, ended in utter and complete failure. All it did was everybody who was involved died. Now, they maybe would have died anyway, so they were going to go down
fighting.
Fine, but there is sometimes a rationale for not doing that. Remaining human, retaining your faith, even if you chose to go to the left because your child was directed to go to the left and you didn't want your child to go to the death alone, was perhaps a greater heroism than it was to fight back or go down fighting. And that type of moral courage, where people could retain their Tzelem Elokim, while so many did not, for somebody to have been able to share their piece of bread with somebody that they loved when they were starving, was perhaps a greater heroism than simply military uprising. That became, of course, silent until the trial of Eichmann in 63. When Israel and the people in Israel and the state of Israel as a rule had a chance to look again at what actually happened and her testimony. But until then, from 48 to 63, there was a vow of silence, and the only commemorations was Yad Mordechai, which was a kibbutz founded to commemorate Mordechai Anilevich, who led the... Nonetheless, the very idea of a day that would perhaps explain how a believing Jew would have lived through it did not take the book of Job. This particular mizmor does it for us. And it does it for us not merely for a Shoah on a national level, though it is clearly national, but for any kind of loss, devastation on a personal level. When we have to go through and ask, why is God not answering my prayers, and why did this fail?
Trust me, there's no answers.
Well, maybe the answers are here. We don't know how to listen to them. So we're going to be looking at this one. When I saw it, I was moved by it. We're going to start first with the ktovet. The ktovet is the first verse, which I already told you is not the body of the verse. It usually tells us who the author is. In this case, the author is Asaph. It is not written by David. Asaph is one of the Levim, who wrote many of the Mizmorei Tehillim after the fall of the kingdom, during the period of time after probably Churban Bayit Rishon. Remember that the Tanakh is not canonized until Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, during the time of the Second Temple, at the very end of the period of time. So we have plenty of time in which various poems were composed. And this was clearly composed by somebody who had been through, though he writes in first person most of the time, is discussing a national tragedy, some horrific event. And Rashi and Radak, all of them immediately say this was written about persecution and troubles in the Golos, in the diaspora. So there's no question about that. The big question is on the word Yedutun. Written Yedutun, read Yedutun. And Rabbi Shimshon Rifael Hirsch notes that this occurs in another verse, in another place. Here it's written Al, there it's written Le. And there were speculations whether the name Yedutun is a proper noun. And if that's the case, I would say, wait a minute, is this Lamnatseach Al Yedutun, about this man Yedutun, for Asaph? Is Yedutun the author? Is Asaph the author? Are they both authors? That was the big question. Rashi doesn't even go there. He simply quotes the Medrash. And the Medrash says that the word Yedutun is a play on the word Datot Vidinim. You see the nun in that. Datot Vidinim means the laws, the decrees against our people. Ha'ovrim al Yisrael bagalut. The decrees, the laws. So Yedutun would be a good word for something like Nuremberg laws. You understand? Things of this kind. Any kind of decrees. And that was the word dat vidin, if you remember, in the Megillat Esther, where there were dat vidin, that was laws and decrees that were passed against the Jewish people. Mitzudat David quotes this medrash, but then adds that perhaps it's a musical instrument because he found it in another chapter of Tehillim where it's clearly not discussing that at all. Rabbi Shimshon Rifael Hirsch tries to find the common denominator of wherever the word is used, and he says it is the laws and decrees, not made by man, but made by God, for the good or the bad. And that when it's written al, it's about Yedutun, this is a poem about the decrees of God by Asaph. And when he does that, he resolves the differences and the common denominators for other Mizmorei Tehillim where that appears. It begins immediately, and you'll see this double language. Koli el Elokim ve'etzaka. Koli el Elokim veha'azin elai. My voice, my cry is to God. I scream. My voice is to God. And ha'azin is not the same thing as ya'azin elai. It does not say he will listen to me. It says listen to me. And it is actually written in the imperative. I don't know what your translations do. Most of the translations are just plain wrong. And Rabbi Shimshon Rifael Hirsch points that out grammatically.
This one says, give ear to me.
Give ear. Well, in that sense, it's imperative.
Listen.
It's imperative. Right.
Please listen
to me, even though there is no please. Please notice that. The reason is that if you were writing in pure imperative, tzivui, You would say, azen elai, without the hey. When you make ha'azen elai, and there's a chatach patach underneath the aleph, it's something between will, shall, you understand? So it's a moderated commandment. And that's why your translation is very good. It is. Like it's a good one. Yeah, for a change, this one was good. All of the mefarshim noticed that the word is redundant. Koli, koli, koli el Elokim, my voice is to God. Ibn Ezra and Radak, as they're wont to do, simply say, double language is for emphasis. When you say something twice, again and again, it's to emphasize, to strengthen. Ibn Ezra, however, says, it's written this way because it's time after time. I call out to God. I call out to God. Time after time. Sfona points out that it doesn't say Shem Hashem Yudke Vavke. It's referring to God as the God of din, of judgment, of justice. And so he's calling for justice. Biyom tzarati adoshem darashti. In the day of my trouble, my Lord, I demanded, I sought, I looked. Drisha can mean to seek. Drisha can mean to demand. I mean all of those things all the time, at the same time. Yadi laila nigra velo tafug. Very strange structure, and I put a comma. There is a dash in the line in the Misora. Yadi, my hand. So Rashi says, it's a call about my hand. Laila, night, is golus, the time of hestoponim, when it seems like God is not with us. Remember we talked about that in the past, why Elie Wiesel called his book Night. It's when it's no apparent presence of God is apparent. But the word that's missing is ba, balaila. It doesn't say in the night, at the night, during the night. It just says night. Nigra is a female noun. It can't be for Laila. It's Laila Tov, not Laila Tova. But Yad is female. So the hand is oozing and will not stop. Nigra means oozing, nigar, oozing. So Rashi says the hand seems to be wounded. It's oozing blood and pus and does not stop. And you're saying, oh, my hand, night, it oozes, it will not stop. Refuses, who refuses? My soul refuses to be comforted. But why the hand? That will become clear soon. It will become clear soon. So keep in mind that the issue is somehow that the hand represents some kind of a wound that you can see. And what happens during this night where it's both a physical as well as a psychic night, a time of darkness, where it doesn't seem that God is paying attention, where one is melancholy and verschwaust, right, in deep, dark depression. Eskera Elokim ve'emia. I remember God. Am I remembering God? Eskera. Or am I just calling out to God? I remember. And I yearn. Asicha, I speak of it. I converse about it. Vatitatef ruchi, until I faint, I swoon. Selah. Our commentaries are divided. I remember the atrocities, God, and I yearn. Then why would you yearn? Well, in this case, it's not so much a yearning as it is this krechts, this kind of like, if you like, a visceral kind of schmelz, you know, from inside. And then, you know, because you have this thing here, how can you relieve it? You want to talk about it. Belch, yeah. Chazal say if you have a worry in your heart, before there was psychotherapy, what should you do? De'aga belev ish yesichena. If you have worries, if you've got pain, if you are in depression, what should you do? Talk about it. It will relieve it. That's what it is. And lasuach sicha is what we call in Yiddish upreden the house. It's not functional speech. It's not asking you, give me this. It's speaking to be heard. It's the kind of speech in which you simply express your feelings. And in the expression of it, there is already
relief.
Only in this case, what happens is there is a swooning. Sometimes, as a person finally discusses what happened to them, the things that have been repressed and kept inside for so long in order to be able to move on. But this thing inside, as I remember it, you start talking, it's almost as if you're now reliving it. And you get this feeling like you're going to pass out. It was very interesting that during, and I mentioned the Eichmann trial, a man that called himself, his nom de plume was Katzepnik, is the letters KC, which stands for concentration camp. There's a kibbutznik, there's a Katzepnik. He called himself Katzepnik, and that became the name by which he wrote. His name really was Yechiel Dino. And Yechiel Dino was in Auschwitz. He's the one that wrote the novels. They're not read much in America. The Hebrew was very poignant. He was as part of the Sonderkommando and so on. And when he was one of the chief testifiers against Eichmann. And in the Eichmann trial, he passed out a few times, and one time they were sure that it was a heart attack, and perhaps it was. He was hospitalized. He described things in the most vicious way, and they were absolutely accurate. In other words, everything that he did, he had the power of expression that many could not express. In other words, I'll tell you, people will give facts about what they went through, but they don't give you details, and he could make those details live, but when he made them live, he also made them live for him, for himself. So he actually fainted a few times. And so this is what this person is saying is, when I remember, and then I yearn for it, and this homiya can mean ache in the heart. It can be either from yearning or from horrible sorrow. That language is, by the way, what we speak about doves, homim. The sound they make.
Wow.
That's called homia. Asicha, I speak of it, and my spirit swoons. I faint. Selah. Achasta shmurot enai. You held my eyes shmurot. At night there was a thing called Ashmoret HaLaila. The night was divided into watches. So certain periods of the night are called watches, Shmurot. You held my eyes in Shmurot. So we have again two opinions. One of them is, I can't keep my eyes open. And Rashi says, I can't keep it open from mi'otim halot, because my heart is so numbed. A great symptom of deep grief and depression is that you just want to sleep. It's an escape. And you don't really feel the pain. It's like it's too much, you're stunned. Otem halev, he says. And so all he wants to do is, it's like you're keeping, and Rashi says, my eyes, they're glued together. Do you remember ever being under anesthesia and they wake you up and they call your name, Esther, yeah, Esther, yeah. Wake up, and you can't wake up? He says, I can't get my eyes open. Comes along Mitzudot and Radak and says, nonsense. He says, my eyes are being held open as if I was the watchman. I can't sleep. I'm looking at the clock every minute and I see another hour has passed. Another power has passed. I just can't sleep at all. And then he says, nifamti. Pam means a time, right? Pam achare pam. Pi'imot halev is heartbeat. Pa'amon, from the same word, a bell. Bing, bing, bing. Nif'amti is when something makes your heart race and it begins to, and I cannot speak. I can socheach, but I can't articulate. I can't explain. I can't talk. Comes Malbim and says that the expression that he said earlier, that he swoons, is that like a dying person, like a gosses, he cannot open his eyes. He wants to, but he can't. His heart is racing to give more oxygen to the brain. He still wants to say some words, so he opens up his mouth, but he cannot say it. It's what happens at the very end. It's what happens in the last process of death. They want terribly to say something, and they cannot. And he describes it in a language that is incredible.
It's almost like a nightmare.
A nightmarish type of
experience.
Exactly.
And you can't.
You can't scream. You can't. And even when you finally can express your pain, all it does is make you faint. Chishavti yamim mikedem. Some treat the word chishavti as I thought. Rashi Hadak. I thought of days gone by, of days of old. Shnot olamim, the years of forever. You understand? Mm-hmm. I thought it. And Rashi says, what did he think of? To try to make sense of the things that happened to him, he tried to think of the great events of his life and of history. That's the difference between yamim mikedem, days of old, and shnot olamim, years of history, years of worlds gone by. I try to put myself in context. Did this ever happen before? Did other people live through this? What happened in the past? And among other things, Eskera Neginati, I remember the melodies that I played at night when I spoke with my heart. Spoke to myself musically. You understand? When I could express myself through my music. And my spirit went searching for an answer. Malbim explains to us as follows. When he says, Chishavti, I calculated. Sfono says, I calculated, did such a calamity befall others? Has there been such an event in history before? Was there such a thing before? Did anybody else live through what I lived through? Most of us believe that our great events, we live through them as if we're the only ones that ever got married,
yeah.
The only ones that ever had
right.
a baby.
Right.
And then when we have a tragedy befall us, did anybody else ever have this pain? And frankly, then we find comfort knowing that somebody else perhaps did, hence support groups or talking mm-hmm. to somebody else who's been through the same event. Malbim says no. Chishavti, remember we talked earlier that this was like somebody in the last moments of his life seeing, I thought of the days of old, says Malbim, dying people see
their life
a screen
life.
All
yeah.
of their life in front of them. They see, but interestingly, they also see Shnot Olamim. They see their lives in a context of history. They get almost like a bird's eye view. They understand maybe events in their lives and what they led to. When we live through our lives, we don't know what the consequences are. Now we know the consequences of our actions for better or worse. Radak says, in Golus, I remember the days of old. Oy, it was so good. And Radak says, in the darkness of the night, we remember the good days, the happy days. We recall all of those things. And hence, I remember the nigun, the melodies. Because those are the last things that go. Those are deeply ingrained in our psyche, the melodies that the lullabies, the songs that were sung to us. And then you go searching. And as a result comes the next stanza. The stanza that comes from the 8th, 9th, and 10th verse that are a series of rhetorical questions. Hard, hard questions. Hale'olamim yiznach Adonai? Will God abandon us and leave us, neglect us forever? V'lo yosif lirtzot od? Will he never again want us? Ha'efes lanetzach chazdo? Has his loving kindness reached its end forever? Had depleted forever? Gamar omer ledor vador? Is he finished? Is it finished what he had promised from generation to generation? In other words, has he annulled the promise? Has he annulled the fact that we're chosen and that he made his promises? Is this no longer valid? Hashachach hanotken? Forget to forgive and pardon? Im kafatz be'af rachamav? Did he kafatz is to jump or to kafatz yadecha, to spring your hand? In his rage, did he close his hands on his mercy? Where is the chesed which is unconditional? Where are the pledges that this would be for all future generations? And from verse 11 begins the answers. Va'omar. So I said, and when you said, it means you said to yourself. If it doesn't say who you said it to, it means I thought, I articulated. He's trying to make sense of what happened to him and what is happening to him. Chalotihi. Rashi says, these troubles have not come except to make me ill. And like illness, why does God make us ill? Why do we get disease? To make us change. You've got to change. You're headed in the wrong direction. And that's what its purpose is. He says, troubles come to us to shake us up so that we come back and see what we've done and review it. Number one. And as a result, says Rashi, comes the second half, shnot yamin elyon. The word shnot can be, if it was attached to something, it would be shana, shnot, shnot yamim tovim. And we saw the word earlier, shnot olamim. It's called nismach. Shana, shanim, shnot milchama. When it's nismach, when you attach it to another thing, it begins years of. Years of. So in this case, the question is it shnot yamin elyon? Is it the years of yamin elyon? Or is it the word leshanot, lehishtanot, to change, from the word shinui? And if that's the case, shnot means it's the, did you change the right hand above? Yamin Hashem Osachail, Yemin Hashem Romema, Yemin Hashem Nedari Bakoach. Throughout our liturgy, we speak about God when He does His miracles, that it is the right hand of God. And we also speak about Yemin Mekarevet, the right hand that embraces, whereas the small Docha and the left pushes away. So He's saying, did you change the hand of salvation? Did you change the hand of power? Did God change? Is He not the same God? Is He different from what He was? That's what Rashi says. So he says what happens is, the hand that loved you is also the hand that needs to smack you sometimes because He loves you. The change occurred because of me. That's Rashi. Ibn Ezra and Radak say that the word chaloti does not come from the word machala, sickness. It comes instead from the word ochila, tochelet. If you ask what is a person's chances of life, their prognosis, in Hebrew the word is tochelet. What is the hope? What hope do I have? How much time do I have? It is what I hope for. It comes from the root originally of chalala, hollow. When there's hollow, I want that hollow filled. If I have a hollow in my belly, I am hungry. If I have a hollow in my heart, I'm looking for love. I'm looking for somebody to embrace me. I'm looking for somebody to fill me up, in a sense, okay, emotionally. And hence that concept of yearning, of longing. Haloti is I have become hollow. And the hollowness is in me. Shnot. When I think of the years, that we saw the right hand. In other words, what makes me inside whole is because I have a memory of when it was good, when God came to me, when he was at my side, when he made miracles for me. And now it's nothing there, so there is a hollow. They're all playing with this language, which is rather complex. But Malbim presents to us a theological issue, which is, by the way, not his original. He brings all the sources for it. That is, the hand of God, if it reaches out to you, by the way, when you shake, if somebody's facing you, and you're shaking his right hand, do you see what you're doing? You're going
across.
Mm-hmm. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
If you were going straight this way, you'd be shaking his left hand. Is that correct?
Yeah.
If he's walking beside me and he stretches out his right hand, then which hand can he walk beside me and hold me up with?
Left.
My left. Now here comes the following. God's right hand is stretched out to us at all times. He does not change. And he brings the quotations from the Rambam. He has not changed. The hand of miracles, the hand of salvation, the one that reaches out to us and wants us to come to him, is there all the time. But my hand is at fault. Because his hand is reached out, what do I need to do? I have to touch. I have to go. So, Abarbanel tells us that when it says, Hashem tzili, Hashem tzilcha al yad yeminecha, God is your shadow at your right hand, at your right hand. God relates to you as you relate to him. If you turn your back to him, he's a shadow. What does he do? He's not changed. Who's changed? You've changed. His hand is there. What do you need to do? Reach out. You have to reach out. But if you're reaching out with the wrong hand. So what did he say about his hand?
Oozing.
It's oozing. May I remind you of Shakespeare's Macbeth, Lady Macbeth?
Out, out.
Out, out. It's oozing. It's this way I see myself filled with guilt, and therefore I don't reach out because I think my hand is dirty.
Right.
My hand is oozing. It will not stop, and therefore I don't dare stretch out that oozing hand to God because I think it's too dirty. What? It's not that God doesn't forgive us, it's that we don't forgive ourselves. It's how we judge ourselves that's so horrific and turns us away from him. So he's right there, but we won't reach out, and we won't reach out because we don't think we're worth it. And by the way, Rabbi Shimon Lefay here says more or less very similar words. And by the way, please notice that it's written, I wrote, V'ktiv is askil. The kri is eskol. Askil means I will remind others. Eskol means I will remember. And there's a reason for it being both ways. Because it's not just for me to remember, it's my job to remind others. Askir esko maleleka. I will remember, I will remind others of God's great deeds. Ki eskera mikedem pilecha. When I remember of age old your wonders. Vehagiti bekol poalecha. And when I contemplate, when I meditate on all that you do, this beautiful world, the way things grow. And when I dare to speak instead of my own pain, I speak of your great deeds, of what you do. Elokim, bakodesh darkecha. God, your ways, which are inscrutable, I can't make sense of them. I know one thing for sure. What are they? They lead into sanctity. Rashi says, your purpose is to sanctify your name in this world. And your purpose, in order to sanctify your name, because you're Elohim, you must ultimately find, judge evildoers. So I may be suffering now, but I have to trust that ultimately what is happening is going to lead to not only my salvation, but the punishment of those that deserve it. Now, if God punishes, he has to also punish if I'm not doing well. But I recognize that what you do is meant to sanctify your name. So that what would we say? Mikel Gadol Ke Elohim. Who is such a great God as our God? Atah Hakel. You are the only God. Osefele. That does wonders. Hodata ba'amim uzecha. And you have made known amongst all other nations your strength. You did this in the past. And as a result, what can I rely on? I'm right now stuck in a little tiny place. But if I look at the whole extent of history, what do I see? That he prevails. And if not on me alone, then at least me as a people. That it comes out okay at the end. Ga'alta bezro'a mecha. You redeemed your people with your arm. Not just your hand, your whole arm. Who did you redeem? Bnei Yaakov, the sons of Yaakov, ve Yosef. Alright, Yadis. Yosef is one of the sons of Yaakov. Why do I need to say the sons of Yaakov and Yosef? Yosef was exiled before everybody else. Was cast into the prison, but came to the throne. He did not forget where he came from, not with the wife of Potiphar, but then later on he also didn't forget once he was on the throne. He could have, like many Jews, when they reach prosperity and proper assimilation into the culture, do what? What do the majority do?
Forget
who you are and what you are. So Yosef represents where they came from. Right. So who will God redeem? Those that turn their backs on him? The answer is no. Those who remember, no matter how much they became part of a society and were successful, those God redeemed. So Yosef is redeemed. He's not only redeemed, both of his sons become tribes. In other words, he gets a double portion. He didn't just remember that he was a Jew because the anti-Semite told him he was a Jew. He didn't remember that he was a Jew because Hitler said your grandmother was a Jew. You understand? That wasn't the reason. He remembered that he was a Jew even when he could have
forgotten
and escaped. Escaped into the wider culture, escaped into rich. Remember, and that's our biggest challenges have not always been persecution. It's been success. Our biggest challenges have been what did we do when we were successful, when we weren't. It's why there's today less than 4 million Jews in America. And there was, when you and I were growing up, well over 6 million. What happened to 2 million? What happened to one third of all of American Jews? They opted out. 70% are marrying non-Jews. And what percent belong to any kind of organization? I'm not even talking about a synagogue, even for JOS. That's what they tried to hide with the last demographic.
Hadassah.
Hadassah is, who's got Hadassah? Hadassah's dying out. So Yosef represents the Jew that did good among the Goyim, but didn't forget who he is. Bnei Yaakov, as opposed to Bnei Yisrael, is Yaakov always represents those that are crushed by the heel. It's when Jacob is being persecuted. So it's the rest of the Jews that remember their persecution. You redeem them. Ra'uch hamayim Elokim. Water saw you, God. Ra'uch hamayim yachilu. When the water saw you, they trembled. Afirgezu tehomot. And the waters in the depths underneath, subterranean waters, began to rage. Zomu maim, waters flowed. Avot kol natnu shchakin. In the clouds, the heavens gave forth their sounds. This is thunder. Af chatzatzecha yitalechu. Arrows, thunderbolts.
Oh.
Went walking across the skies. Kol ra'amcha bagalgal. The sound of your thunder was heard in the circle, it means in the atmosphere around earth. He'iru brakim tevel, as lightning lit up the entire world. Ragza v'tir'ash ha'aretz, and the earth then raged. And rash means quaked. He's describing the way the water split. What causes that kind of thing? What happens in the last typhoons when we had a tsunami? What happens in a tsunami? There is an earthquake underneath the belly of the ocean. This is what he's saying. So this is actually earthquake and volcanic activity that occurs underneath. Bayam darkecha. So that you paved a pathway in the sea. Ushvilecha b'mayim rabim, and you made little tiny lanes where previously there was deep water. Ve'ikvotecha lo nodau, but your footsteps could not be seen. A moment after they crossed, could you see God's footsteps as he paved that road for them? He made it happen, but you did not see him. You understand? You saw and you didn't see. Nachita katzon amecha. You led your people like sheep, but not to the slaughter. Biyad Moshe ve'Aaron. Through the hand called Moshe and Aaron. Now get this. Remember we talked about the hand? The hand in the first stanza, the hand in the second stanza, the hand in the third stanza. God's hand, my hand. The hand by which God makes things happen. You don't see God's hand. It's the instruments that he uses. And as a result of that, he leaves it hanging. What are the answers to his questions? Will you abandon us forever? Don't you think the Jews in Egypt said the same thing? As their babies were cast into the water? Did you forget the promises? From generation to generation, did you forget to have mercy as they were ground into the mortar? But in the end, what happened? So if you have the bird's eye view, as this author wants you to have, what's happening to me in single person is not a story about me. What's happening to me is part of the story of our people. And if you look and see the whole thing, you will see that he never abandons. And that out of the greatest pain, the greatest sense of abandonment, the greatest holocaust, if you like, great things, wonderful things come, the Yeshua comes through it. This is God's way, inscrutable. And eventually those that hurt us, those that deserve the punishment will do what? They will also be. You can't see it in a perspective of 70 years or even 100 years. You can see it only if you look through the whole path of our history. So what happened to the Romans and where are they now?
Gone.
And what happened in that we managed to create a country of our own? And yes, we're threatened again. And yet I've got to believe that all of this is the hand of God.
Mm-hmm.
And do I need to understand the wars of Gog Umagog if I look at Sunni and Shiite and ISIS? And come on! And what does the world say as they rain down barrel bombs on top of civilians?
Nobody cares.
Not a word.
Nobody cares.
But they'll call us for what happened
but
in Gaza.
Yeah.
Come on, we know what this is.
Yeah,
crazy.
And the issue is that we need to recognize that there is a hand that's leading us. And there's a hand that reached out to save us. The only thing that we got to do is reach back.
I have a question.
We got to reach back.
Yeah.